Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast.
We are your support, so let's talk fucking cancer.
Hey everyone, it's Colette from the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. As we close out this month of April with esophageal cancer, head and neck cancer, and testicular cancer awareness month, we head into May with bladder cancer, brain cancer, melanoma, and skin cancer awareness month. Stay tuned throughout May as we highlight brain, bladder, melanoma, and skin cancer awareness.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. I'm Leah, one of your co-hosts, and I'm sitting here with my amazing co-host, Colette.
Hello, everyone.
And our fabulous producer, Julia.
Hi, guys.
And today, we are very honored as we are wrapping up April and jumping off into May. May is Brain Cancer Awareness Month. And so this week, we are really honored I just can't think of any other word to describe this. So we have Savannah joining us today from Tennessee.
Yay!
To discuss her experience or her brain cancer experience. So welcome, Savannah.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yes. And Savannah, you reached out to us. And so we can't thank you enough because your story is quite unique, and why don't you tell us about Savannah, pre-cancer Savannah.
Okay, cool. So I'm 23 now. I was 21 when I was diagnosed. So life before I was diagnosed, it was good. I was your typical, 21-year-old in college. I was a junior in college, but before that, I had a really great childhood. I grew up in the same town that I've always lived in called, it's like about 2 hours from Nashville, I would say, but pretty small town. And growing up, I was really into sports. So I was very athletic, always involved in some sort of sport. So for me, like I tried out a lot of different sports when I was young, and then softball is what stuck with me. So
okay.
I played softball for about 10 years and then up until high school. And then in high school, I found rowing. So I was a competitor
for
several years. Yeah. So that was my favorite sport for sure. I really, and I did that a little bit in college too, like for fun on a club team. But yeah, I was always really close with my immediate family, my parents, my older brother, my grandparents, and I just had a really good upbringing. And I was always, you know, super involved with my academics. I've always loved school. So I was super excited when I got accepted into University of Tennessee, Knoxville.
Yeah.
Which is where I did my undergraduate studies.
What did you study?
Psychology. So
okay.
I actually started out doing pre-vet, which is completely opposite.
Okay.
But I've always loved animals. And so to be completely honest, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I was 18. So
right.
A lot of people do. So
yeah.
I remember making a list and I was like, well, I could go into psychology, but I really love animals. So I shadowed a veterinarian and I just thought it was the coolest thing. So I did that for freshman year. And then I shadowed some more surgeries in my program, and I was like, I don't know if this is for me. Yeah, I took a general psych course my freshman year, and I transitioned to that major my sophomore year. So,
okay.
But my whole college experience was kind of wacky because COVID-19 hit my freshman year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that was enough on its own.
Right.
Before I got diagnosed. So that was freshman year. Sophomore year was completely online for me, so I was at home. And then junior year, I actually, that first semester, I went back in person.
Okay.
So that was probably my favorite semester because that's when I met like some of my closest friends. We roomed together. But it was also kind of challenging because that's when I was experiencing my symptoms that I did not know what they were, but I was experiencing them. And it was just really weird because it was like my best time in college and some of my best memories.
Yeah.
But some of the like scariest ones too. So
what were some of the symptoms that you started noticing?
Yeah. So I started experiencing them or at least noticing them summer of 2021. So it was, I experienced these symptoms for about a year before I got diagnosed.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
It took a lot to get my scan, unfortunately, I think, because I presented as young and like.
Right.
Yeah. Brain cancer was not anyone's bingo card.
Yeah. No, not. So I experienced several different symptoms. I did experience pretty dramatic weight loss, but I don't think anyone thought anything of it just because my weight has always fluctuated really easily. Looking back, it definitely was a red flag because I'm 5'9" and I was weighing less than my mom who's 5'4". And
oh, wow.
So it was, yeah. Again, I don't think anyone thought of it. I mean, I was walking a lot every day because I was walking to work, to and from work. And then on a college campus, you know, you walk a lot.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, our society has such a toxic view of thinness and weight loss that it was probably like, good for you losing all that weight. You look so skinny. Like that's all anybody was focusing on, probably.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like I had a lot of people, be like, oh, you look so good now. Like, are you dieting? Like, what are you doing? And to look back now, it just kind of, I can't describe the feeling, but it's like, well, I was actually sick, but.
Right. I don't know. Maybe next time you see someone with extreme weight loss, ask, is everything okay?
Right.
Are you feeling okay?
Yeah, let's.
Well, and something I've noticed too is in older people, like elderly people, it's like, oh my gosh, are you sick? And then in younger people, it's like, good for you. Like, it's so
right. Yeah,
that's a really good point.
Yeah. So that was one of the symptoms. And then I personally don't remember this, but my mom pointed it out to me after I was diagnosed. She was going back, like, oh gosh, what did we miss?
Right.
And she told me that I wasn't really wanting to eat as much because I was nauseous all the time.
Oh.
And that's something that, you know, going back to that and trying to think of myself in the moment, I wasn't noticing because I was busy. I was, you know, going about and I wasn't thinking about what I was eating. I was just grabbing some and stuff like that.
And you're in college, you're probably stressed. And with stress comes anxiety and, you know, there that can manifest in many different ways. So yeah, I'm sure it was probably just like, oh, you know, I'm busy.
Right.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. But probably the most concerning one that really bothered me was I was having these what I called episodes at the time because I didn't know what it was.
Right.
The first one I had was summer of 2021 and I was in the car with my mom. I was driving and she was in the passenger seat and I can't really explain it, but it's almost like I zoned out and I was like outside of my body, which I've dissociated before. And so, but I knew that that's not what it was because it's And so she was trying to say stuff to me and I could not, I just could not understand it. And then when I tried to say something back, nothing was coming out. And I actually started veering off the road.
Oh my God.
You were driving when this happened?
Yeah. I was driving. And it only lasted about 10 seconds, 15 seconds or so. But when I
snapped, a lot can happen behind the wheel in 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah. When I snapped out of it, I was so scared because I was like, I don't know what just happened to me.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
I kind of blew it off. I was like, oh, it's low blood sugar, whatever. It didn't happen again for probably a week or 2 weeks or something like that. And then when it happened again and I was like, oh, blood sugar again? Like, what's going on? Like, and that kept happening. And over time, it got more frequent when it would happen.
Okay.
So I went from having it once a week or twice a week to right up to when I got my scan. It was happening 8 to 10 times a day.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Yeah. And so looking back for a while, I didn't tell anybody about it. I mean, my mom was with me the first time it happened. But I didn't tell anybody when it was happening because my friends, when I finally did tell them what was happening, they said it looked like I was just zoned out thinking about something.
Really?
And so I thought I was going crazy. Like, I didn't know what was going on. I went to the doctor multiple times for these symptoms and was put on anxiety medication. That did not work. And so I thought I was going crazy. I didn't know what
was going on.
And so flash forward to, I was walking to one of my classes and I went into the classroom and I sat down. I remember it was health psychology. That's kind of ironic. Sat my bag down and I just remember like feeling so off. I started gripping my desk because I was like, oh my God, because I could tell when they were about to happen.
Right.
There's nothing I could do to like get out of it. So I was like, I cannot have this happen in the classroom. So I just ran out, left all my stuff in there, and I was sitting on a bench outside of the classroom and it happened and I was by myself and I tried texting my mom, but it was complete gibberish because I couldn't understand speech when this
right.
So she was scared because I've never texted her complete gibberish before. So she was with my dad and they called me and they're like, Savannah, are you okay? What's going on? And I couldn't understand what they were saying. I didn't know where I was. What's going on? I was so confused. So my friend came and got me. My mom called my friend and she walked me to the health center on campus. And they did like a full workup. Everything was normal. All my EKG, everything came back normal. But the nurse practitioner that looked at me, they were like, this is neurological. Like, there's something going on. She's the first one who acknowledged that. And
wow.
Need to get checked out.
Right.
I got referred to a neurologist finally after a year of experiencing this.
Oh, my gosh.
And it turns out I was having absent seizures.
Oh.
Had no clue. So I got the scan that was at UT Medical because it was, you know, near my school. And that's when they found the brain tumor and the brain bleed.
Where was the tumor located?
My left parietal lobe.
And yeah. So you had a bleed. Was the tumor causing the bleed as well?
Yeah, that's what they suspect. There was evidence of necrosis. So,
okay. Oh, wow. So what happens next?
So from that point on, you mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so your neurologist did the scan, found the tumor. Did they then refer you to an oncologist?
I was not stable enough to go home or anything like that. They were like, it's going to have another brain bleed or something worse is going to happen. It was found very late. So they fast tracked me through the ER and they did like a CT scan of my whole body to make sure it wasn't, you know, and it wasn't, there was no other tumors or anything, but they sent me up to the ICU and that's where I was for a couple of nights. And then I had surgery, like, I think on April 4th. So it was 3 days later.
Okay. So like you didn't leave the hospital, you were in. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, and I was still having seizures up until my surgery.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Seizure medication. It was still really bad. And so they went in, they did the surgery. It was successful as a gross total resection, but I had so much swelling in my brain that it was difficult to close me up. And so I had a lot of deficits from surgery because there was a lot of obviously trauma to my brain.
Right. Yeah.
And so I lost like both sides of peripheral vision temporarily.
Oh.
But we were told to be permanent. So it was.
Oh my gosh.
It was very scary. I don't know how to explain it other than horrifying.
Right. Yeah. And so at this time, I know you said this April of 2021?
2022.
Okay. So, and by this point, you know, COVID has kind of passed. Were your parents able to come stay with you at this time during in the hospital?
They still had COVID protocol.
Okay.
Yeah. So on top of ICU, you know, rules where you can only have like one or two people in and visiting others.
Yeah.
So technically, yeah, it was difficult because my parents weren't able to stay with me like when they would have wanted to.
Right.
And that's actually, I woke up, I don't remember how long after my surgery, but it was like in the middle of, it was like early morning. So maybe like 2, 3 a.m. I'm not really sure the time, but
yeah,
I woke up and I was alone.
Oh, how awful. I'm so sorry.
Oh, scary. And my vision had shifted a lot.
Right.
With the tumor, like before surgery. Like, and that was another red flag too, is I had to go get a different eyeglass prescription like every few months.
Oh my gosh.
And my vision was bad. And so that alone, and then waking up without my glasses.
Did they think like you were just having like ocular degeneration, or like what were they
Okay. I mean, we weren't told anything was abnormal at any of the eye doctor places or anything. So yeah, but when I woke up, I knew something was off. Like, I was still groggy and I was trying to wake up, but I was looking around. I was like, I can't see. I cannot see anything.
Oh,
like,
no.
Probably this narrow of a strip of vision that I could see.
Oh.
And when my parents finally did get there, when, like, as soon as visiting hours opened, they got there. And I just remember saying, "Mommy, Mommy, like, I can't see."
Right.
What's going on? And so, long story short, they took me to this eye specialist. And he basically told us it was permanent.
Wow.
Which it ended up not being. So that was, but we were told you're never going to be able to drive again. You're going to need like mobility aids to get around. But luckily over the course of a few weeks of recovery, my vision started slowly coming back.
Good.
So we think it was the swelling probably causing.
Right.
But yeah, when I woke up, I couldn't read anything. I couldn't write. I was writing like a 4-year-old, probably.
Right.
So yeah, just a lot of deficits from surgery.
What was your mental health like at this, or like, what was your mental state like? I mean, or were you just in such survival mode? Were you even able to wrap your head around that? Like, can you talk about that?
Honestly, it feels like a blur.
Right.
There's a lot that I don't remember that my parents remember. And since then, like, remember last year is the first time they kind of opened up to me about their experiences, because that first year we were still in survival mode.
Sure.
And I don't think any of us still have even fully processed everything. But, you know, they've told me things where I'm like, wait, what? but I think, for whatever reason, I really just think my survival instincts kicked in. Like, I remember laying there, which I forgot to mention, my boyfriend, we had met a few months prior. So we had just started dating for a month when this had happened.
Oh wow.
But I mean, he stepped up to the plate. I mean, he was there for me. And
nice. That's wonderful.
He took care of me when I was sick. And so he was there, and I just remember him being there, and my parents kind of left the room to give us some privacy, and I just started bawling. Like, I was like, I'm so scared. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Which is a lot, because we had just started dating like a month
ago. Yeah.
Like, we knew pretty early on, like, that we were very serious about each other. So
yeah,
it was just one of those things. But so I do remember being very scared.
Yeah.
But I just remember going into surgery, I was like, well, there's nothing I can change about the situation now. I just need to, you know, believe in what I believe in. And just, there was a sense of peace about me, because I'm like, okay, well, the surgery, it's going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. I just need to relax my body and let the doctors do it. Okay.
Good for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like my mom kind of taught me that mentality. I mean, she was a nurse. So okay. For her, it was really hard me going into surgery, because she knew she had been in surgeries like that before.
Right, right.
And it was really tough for her. But my parents and my brother, they like really held it together for me.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's nice. Wow. So what did the rest of treatment look like after surgery?
Yeah. So after surgery, I had about a 6-week window, I want to say, between when I was supposed to start radiation and chemo.
Okay.
So, actually, we were unsure what my diagnosis was.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, when they did the frozen section in the hospital, they said it not looking good at all. It's looking like a high-grade glioma. This could be life-threatening, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then when the pathology results, the initial pathology results came back, it said it was high-grade glioma, which is what we anticipated. And we were told it was grade 4 glioblastoma.
Oh. Oh, wow.
So I started chemo and radiation because that's what we thought I had.
Right.
So I did 30 days of radiation and 42 days of chemo, like, together. So
at the same time.
So it was 7 days a week chemo, 5 days a week radiation.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was oral chemo, so it was temozolomide.
Okay.
Yeah, I was doing that 3 weeks into treatment, because treatment was about 6 weeks total, I want to say. Yeah. With that, you know, chemo. I think it was about 6 weeks. About halfway through, we had connected with my neuro-oncologist that I have now.
Okay.
And he wanted to do a second round of genetic testing to just confirm diagnosis and make sure everything was, you know. And that came back that I had grade 3 anaplastic ependymoma.
So, okay. Gotcha. Wow. Okay.
Which, you know, I'll talk later about ependymoma specifically, but it's very rare. There's not a standard treatment protocol for it because there's not enough.
So was the treatment that you were on, was that effective for
that? A lot of patients with ependymoma do not do chemo. Some do. It depends on your circumstance. But that's not typically. It's usually just radiation and obviously individual circumstance. But my doctors and me, like, we decided for me to keep doing it. There's not enough research to say if that is effective. But I said, okay, well, I'm going to give it my very best shot if it is effective. Like, I was managing it, like, pretty well. So, having some side effects, but it wasn't unbearable. So, So, I continued on and finished that treatment in, I think, June of 2022.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit more about this type of cancer.
Yeah. So, ependymomas are very rare.
I've never even heard of ependymoma. I hadn't either until I talked to you.
Yeah. So most people don't. I had never heard of it, certainly, before I was diagnosed. And I know it's hard to pronounce, too. Like, I remember I was like, ependymoma. Like, I was so confused. But yeah, it's very rare. It's more common in children than adults.
Okay.
But only about...
Well, you were a child at that point in time.
That's true. Yeah, my tumor is considered pediatric. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a type of glioma. It's a central nervous system tumor. It can occur in the brain or spine.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It can occur in children and adults. They don't know the cause of it.
Okay.
But they only account for 1.9%, I believe, of primary and central nervous system tumors, brain tumors.
Wow. Oh my God. Oh, that is super rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, was your neuro-oncologist located in Tennessee, or did you have to travel to locate this person?
Yeah. My parents did a lot of research, called a lot of different facilities, talked to a lot of popular ones. But we ended up at a facility in Tennessee.
Okay. So, oh, good.
Yeah, Vanderbilt is one.
I was saying, is it the well-known Tennessee one?
Yeah.
So
And that's where I travel to get scans and things like that now.
Okay. And so how often are you going in for scans now?
Every 3 months still.
Okay. How has that been, dealing with that now that you're 2 years out? I swear scanxiety is real. Do you feel me on that?
100%.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's such a weird feeling. Like, the first 2 months, because my scans have been clear for a while, so I'm considered evidence of disease.
Yeah.
It's such a weird feeling, though, because it's like for at least for me, the first 2 months after getting the scan, I'm like, okay, you know, this is good. Like, I have some reassurance that I can carry on with what I'm doing.
Right.
But then the month leading up to it, it's just like, ooh, not good for me.
Right. It puts you in just kind of a, the mental space is just so unstable right then. I know what you mean. It's really, I've talked a lot about anxiety on our episodes because it's real and we question ourselves. We're like, is it just me? Am I crazy? And then you start to talk to people and you're like, no, they, other cancer patients get this.
Every single person we've talked to is, oh yeah, no, anxiety is real.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's 100% real. And I feel like who haven't experienced it or who are not connected with someone who experiences it don't truly understand.
Yeah. Have you become also, I know that we've talked to a few people and I know my mom has dealt with this. Have you become hyper aware of any symptoms that you experience? Yeah.
I still experience head pains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what really gets me, and just any other symptom like weight gain or loss or
sure.
You know, there have been times where I've felt like I was going to have a seizure. But I haven't had one. Like, I'm on seizure.
Right.
It's so.
Do you think that's like might that be like a PTSD response, maybe?
I know that a lot of, I don't know if other people, like, I'm connected, I'm friends with people, other people in the brain tumor community.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they're on seizure medication too, but I don't know if they experience the same thing with feeling like I'm going to have one.
Right.
It's so strange because it feels somewhat similar to anxiety, but it's like different. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
Right.
So yeah, sometimes I'm questioning myself. I'm like, am I just having a panic attack or
fine?
But yeah, I have to remind myself that, you know, I can't control what's happening and that, yeah, just.
It's hard.
Yeah.
You describing that almost reminds me of ghost pains that amputee patients have experienced where they still feel like something like is there or like
it's hurting or.
Yeah. That feeling of, is it coming on or what is this? Like it doesn't fully set in, but you feel it kind of coming on. Yeah. That's very, I'm sorry that, you know, you still have those sort of ghost pains.
Yeah.
Your experience.
Yeah, it can definitely be difficult to deal with.
So after surgery and then you had radiation and chemo together, how was recovery from that?
mixture of emotions for me. I feel like my main symptoms from treatment were fatigue, extreme fatigue and nausea were probably my main, and hair loss. I did have hair loss. In that one spot where I had radiation. It was, I feel like for a while, I still was not processing it. So I think we had planned a beach family vacation, like right after I was done with treatments, because we just needed an escape from everything. So that was, it was good to like, I feel like for a while I was trying to distract myself from what had just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Kind of, try to put a band-aid on it, sort of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't move on with my life. But then I realized after a while that it wasn't working for me. And that there was something bigger that I needed to do.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of when I like got involved with other, like kind of got involved with the cancer community.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, for a while, I mean, I still deal with physical symptoms related to everything. And I think a lot of people in my life don't realize every day. It's like, there's a lot of things small, but what people would consider small things that I have to do that take a lot of energy to do. And then by the time I'm done with the small things, I don't have energy for anything else.
Right.
And that alone, it can be incredibly frustrating to try and explain to people that don't understand. Being someone who's, you know, in their 20s, I see other people my age doing all the stuff that I wish I had the energy to do.
Right. Yeah. But I kind of wanted to hit on that a little bit. I mean, I think kind of the big elephant in the room right now is that you are so young. You are in your early 20s. So, okay, so you see things that other people your age are doing. What other kinds of things are, I guess, I mean, I don't know, how do I ask this? Like,
how has this kind of affected your young
one? Yeah. Like, I mean, God, you were just starting it. So it's like, I don't even know if I can ask how this has impacted you because I don't even know if you knew what the 20s were supposed to be.
Yeah, right. Well, and I wanted to ask too. So during, I'm assuming, and I hope you did, but you took time off of school for treatment, right?
You did not? Did you get your degree while you were dealing with brain cancer?
Yeah, so.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That's something that looking back, I don't know if I say I regret it necessarily, but parts of me definitely do, I guess, because so I was at the end of my second semester of junior year when everything happened.
Right. So you were so close. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a few weeks left. I was taking 5 classes. I had a few weeks left. But I was forced to take incompletes because I could not read or write.
So
I was finishing class. But I finished those like that next summer and like into the fall. And I graduated on time. And
wow. So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I don't know, pure determination, I guess. I think it honestly goes back to your question of what I missed out on. Because I saw everyone around me graduating when I was supposed to graduate and like on track to do all this stuff. And I was like, no, I don't want to miss out on that. So
I tend
to push myself really, really hard and I'm an overachiever. So I think that was one thing that if I could go back in time, I'd probably just be like, let's just take an extra semester. Max a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. That is
quite impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about becoming an advocate for the National Brain Tumor Society.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I realized after trying to kind of avoid thoughts and feelings around my diagnosis that I needed to actually immerse myself in it, sit with those feelings, and also get connected to people who were going through similar things because I felt so alone during treatments. Like,
yeah,
felt extremely isolated. I got treated in an adult facility and I was the youngest one there all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would go with my mom. My mom came with me to treatments every day and everyone treated her like she was a patient. Like every time I went.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, there were comments said to me and just things where I've gotten a lot of really, really rude comments since I was diagnosed.
Wow.
I mean, I've had a lot more support and positive comments than I have negative, but negative ones have really just been really surprising to me because I'm like, I would never say that to someone who's going through this.
Right. Were they trying? I'm just wondering what goes through someone's head.
Yeah.
Like,
so give me some examples.
Please.
So I post on TikTok and social media platforms to kind of spread awareness about young people with cancer. And I've had random people say this where they're like accusing me of not having cancer because I have hair.
Oh my God. That's so uneducated.
Yeah. Things like that.
And people sure feel brave when they're behind a keyboard.
Just other comments, just kind of like, well, you have cancer, like you're really young and you look healthy. Like just
right.
Oh, just the ignorant.
Yeah. Just
I always say, remember that you have the right to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. In airports and stuff. Like me and my boyfriend are long distance at the moment. And so we've been together for like 2.5 years now, but we travel back and forth to see each other. So yeah. Anytime I fly, I usually get some sort of accommodation like wheelchair assist because I get really fatigued and overstimulated in that type of environment.
Yeah.
So every time, without a doubt, that I've gotten wheelchair assist, I'm questioned. I'm looked at like I'm crazy, like I'm faking something.
Right.
Me and my mom traveled somewhere together and there were these young people kind of wheeling people into the elevator. And they're like, you need a wheelchair? Why?
Oh, wow. It's like, you're actually not legally allowed to ask me that.
Right.
Exactly. So
the entitlement people have.
Right.
Like, no one owes anyone an explanation of their health need.
No.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even imagine what goes through your brain to think that you have the right to even
to say that.
Comment.
Yeah. To question.
But
yeah.
It goes, you know, it just goes back to saying how people just,
they don't know.
They don't know. Yeah. They say things and they just don't get it until they're unfortunately in the situation or know somebody in a situation yeah. like this, because it's appalling to me, but it's like, I feel hyper aware because of being in this cancer world for so long, but it's just like shocking. It's shocking. It's always shocking.
Yeah. I am so sorry that you've had to deal with
yeah, this. Me too.
But thank you for continuing to share and be an advocate and not mm-hmm. letting the trolls
yeah.
Stop you from getting your message out.
Yeah.
Because someone needs to hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Because it is so important. And it is so unfortunate that you had to go through this. But to be able to encourage young people to advocate for their health, because I mean, I'm sure every young person out there has been told at least once by their doctor, like, you're fine, you're young, you're healthy.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. like just kind of brushing off those symptoms.
Yeah, totally.
It's the same story I hear. Ever since I've been connected with people in the community, like, oh, my lab results came back normal. Oh, I'm healthy. Yep. I was always fit and all this stuff. And yeah, I just think it's important because people need to be heard and realize yeah. just because you look healthy doesn't mean you are.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think like what led me to getting involved with things like National Brain Tumor Society was really just, I think me and my mom started when we were ready to like kind of be like, okay, yeah, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Like we need to get involved.
Yeah.
This way. We just started Googling like the stats on ependymoma and how underfunded brain cancer and brain tumor research is.
Right.
And we were like, well, we want to get involved to make a difference because this is not right. So that's why we got involved with them and other organizations too.
I saw that you had written articles for Elephant and Tea and you attended Head to the Hill.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm also involved with Teen Cancer America. So they have a program called Play It Back Songs where I work with a producer every week to like write and sing my own songs.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So I have a couple songs out there streaming. One of them's based on my personal journey with cancer and the other one is a song I wrote for an event honoring children who had passed away to cancer.
Oh my god.
I wonder if we can link those in the
show. Yeah, we're gonna link people will be able to get in touch with you and everything. We're gonna link all your info in our show notes so that they can continue to follow your journey.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And something the articles I wrote for T too. I've always enjoyed singing. I was in the choir for like 7 years in middle and high school. And then with writing, I've always enjoyed writing. I think I got that from my mom. She writes poetry. I love poetry. And it was really honestly my music and my writing is just a way to cope with everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of trying to heal slowly. Like I write my articles on different topics. And so I had one on body image, another one rediscovering myself and like what that means and survivorship. I'm writing another one right now. But yeah, I just really just trying to cope with everything that I've been through. And as a young adult.
And what a wonderful, like full circle to be able to come back to writing mm-hmm. after having difficulty with that because of your experience and to be able to have that as an outlet now and be able to return to that that's amazing.
Yeah. We were worried because I think everyone was worried, like my care team and my family and everything, because I also deal with short-term memory that I still deal with. But mm-hmm. the writing, like I said earlier, I've always loved learning and being in school. And like at the time I was a junior, I was looking at grad schools and that's something that I was worried about. I was like, am I even going to be able to do this?
Right.
So yeah, being able to have that back, like the ability to write, is something that I'm extremely grateful for because I know that probably doesn't happen for everyone.
Yeah.
Was that, and like, did you have to, after your surgery, you said you had some deficits, did you have to learn how to like rewrite? Like what things did you have to relearn?
So unfortunately I only got, I should have gotten occupational therapy earlier. I didn't have occupational therapy until like last year.
Oh, wow.
Which I think could have sped up my recovery process if I had. Right. Walking was another thing. I forgot to mention walking down the stairs. I had needed help. Like I couldn't really, honestly, I had to reteach myself all of this like by myself. And I mean, obviously, gosh, it helps me. But it was just one of those things. It's like my brain was like a computer rebooting or something.
Gotcha. Yeah. Did they give you a referral immediately after surgery for occupational therapy, or was that something you had to seek on your own?
So honestly, I can't remember. I know that there was something like where we were getting referred was not seeing patients or something like that. But yeah, for whatever reason, I just did not get occupational therapy. I started getting it last year. There's a really amazing organization near where I live. It's called Austin Hatcher Foundation for Pediatric Cancer, where they provide free services for pediatric cancer patients.
Oh, that's amazing.
Occupational therapy, like talk therapy.
Wow.
All sorts of services. So that's where I got occupational therapy. And it's,
okay.
Yeah.
And how did you finally go about acquiring that?
I mentioned it to my therapist. Okay. Like my talk therapist, and they were able to send a referral.
Okay.
Oh, good. Good. I'm so glad you guys had that resource.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything that you could say to other listeners, especially young listeners out there, to maybe give them some, I don't know, what to look out for or something for awareness, you know, a message for them?
Yeah. So when I've made videos about this in the past, I think people have kind of, like, I made a video about when I was experiencing my symptoms. Like, I was, you know, told this was anxiety and it was actually this. There were some people who were like scared to hear that because I guess there have been people who have been scared for me sharing my story, but that's definitely not my purpose at all. It's to like help spread awareness because I do really at any age, but when you're a young adult, I feel like the media doesn't really cover that as much.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this scary thing that people don't want to think about. But my biggest, I guess, piece of advice or something that I would say is just, you know, your body. And like, I knew something was off. I wish I had advocated for myself more. Yeah. You know your body. And when you know that something's off, you need to advocate for yourself.
Right.
Like, the way the healthcare system is set up, nobody else is going to do it for you.
Nope. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And that's the best point to make because we keep hearing that the advocacy for your self-advocacy and going with what's in your gut. And when you know something's off, you gotta just push. You have to.
I can bet there's a million, you know, young people out there who have felt like this thing is kind of bothering me. I really want to talk to my doctor about it. And they've been brushed off because you're young. Oh, you're young. Oh, you're thin. Oh, like, no, that's not something we have to worry about yet. And you know, maybe sometimes that's true, but like you said, you know your body and you know when something, you know when it's not just anxiety.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it helps a lot too to have a support system to back you up, which not everybody has that. And I feel like that makes it a million times harder to go through these things because
definitely
going back to, you know, when my parents, when I was going through treatment, they were calling every treatment facility, trying to get into a clinical trial, trying to do this, trying to do that. They were my advocates because I had to do it for myself. Like I was just trying to survive and recover.
Right.
So that's really helpful. Just lean on your support system if you have one and just advocate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So speaking of your support system, you and your mom have started a podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's called Cancer Chronicles with Sav and Mama T.
I love it.
Yeah, my mom's name's Tanika. So Mama T, that's what we call her. Yeah. So we started it, I guess, about a year ago. kind of like we were getting more involved with the cancer community. Right. And we had been looking at podcasts out there or that were kind of like cancer podcasts, I guess. And
right.
First, we were curious to listen and just, you know, that kind of thing. But we realized there were several who didn't cover like the caregiver perspective as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are some that do, but when we were looking, we couldn't really find any. So we, you know, wanted to continue advocating. And so we were like, let's just start our own. Let's just
love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And my mom, I think my mom really wanted to share her perspective as caregiver.
Yes.
Because like I mentioned earlier, like there's a lot of things that she went through that I cannot attest to. Like
right.
We went through this together, but two different experiences. We wanted to offer that dual perspective to people. And
yeah.
We also, you know, have recently started adding like guests to our podcast.
Nice.
From different perspectives, like people I'm friends with or, you know, healthcare workers and just things like that. But yeah, it started as a way for me and her to tell our stories and focus on different topics too, like the healthcare system and how AYAs are underrepresented and
things. Right. That's awesome. Well, we're going to have to go and follow you guys and listen.
I'm so excited.
And maybe we'll get to have you back with Mama T one day.
Yes, we'd love to have Mama T on.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much, Savannah. Is there anything else you'd like us to share?
Just about Brain Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah.
Things maybe people could do. Go gray in May. So gray is the color of brain cancer.
Okay. So
wear gray to show your support. You know, things from CERN Foundation, something I want to highlight, Collaborative Ependymoma Research Network. They share lots of really good info about ependymoma.
Okay.
They do National Ependymoma Awareness Day, which is coming up very soon. I think in the next week, if I'm not
mistaken. Okay.
And yeah, just doing things like fundraiser walks for these different organizations, National Brain Tumor Society, CERN Foundation, NIH, things like that. Yeah, just kind of staying informed and yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, we'll go ahead and link all that in our show notes as well so they can go and look at maybe some ways they can donate or do some walks and then check out your podcast. We'd love to hear your songs. So we're going to link all of that in our show notes, okay?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Savannah. Thank you for reaching out. We're grateful for your time, your story.
Yes.
Just grateful for you.
Yeah, and we would love to get an update from you. And like I said, maybe have Mama T on next time too.
Yeah, we would love that. Well, thank
Great.
You.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in this week to hear Savannah's story. If you would like to share your story with us, please reach out at podcasts@weareyoursupport.com
and follow us on all of our social media at LTFC_podcast and listen to us on all of your podcasting platforms. Follow, like, and subscribe. Leave us a review, a very kind review.
Kind reviews. Kind reviews only.
And we will see you guys again next week. Bye.
We are your support. Thank you for talking cancer.